Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome. My name is Louis Strong and I host Headstrong, a podcast where I chat with a number of people in the public eye about their vulnerabilities to understand what the word headstrong means to them. Now, joining me on today's episode is a magnificent musician named Jamie Hanna. We had a chat about what it is like being an independent artist in this immense world of music today, and the things that we can do to help support independent artists like Jamie. I really, really hope you enjoy this episode of Headstrong. But first, a quick note from our series sponsor, RCK Partners. RCK Partners specialise in helping UK businesses claim R&D tax relief across the engineering, agricultural and tech space. If you'd like to find out about this valuable source of funding for your business, head over to rck.partners or follow the link in the podcast description. That's rck.partners. Jamie, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong. How are you today?
I'm very well, handsome. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. Sweating buckets on a Friday afternoon, but we are here.
The sun is shining, but the weekend is close.
Optimism, I love it already.
Always.
It's going to be good. It's so lovely to have reconnected this year because we bumped into each other very strangely beginning of July at a festival. Spent some dangerous hours together, enjoying ourselves. How long have we known each other? God.
A healthy amount of years. It's probably about 6 years or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, goodness. God. We had a good boogie though, didn't we?
We did.
All those years we've missed.
I know, we made up for it, didn't we? Nothing like reconnecting on Jesse J.
Of course.
Oh, what an absolute stellar week, day that was. But for those of you who are listening, who don't know who are you? What do you do? Introduce yourself.
Goodness gracious. I love this. My name is Jamie Hanna. I'm a singer, songwriter, composer, musician from London. I moved here 6 or 7 years ago to study as an opera singer at the Royal College of Music, and then kind of delved more into the pop world and have since collaborated with Boy George, performed with Kylie Minogue and been releasing my own music as an artist.
So cool. Literally so cool. Because when I first met you 6 or 7 years ago, I didn't know about any of this. And then you started to appear on my For You page during lockdown. And I'm going, oh, hang on, I knew who that is. And then my sister would talk about you, about all the stuff that you were doing that was so exciting. And it's so cool. How would you describe your music now that you released to anyone who hasn't listened to it?
I think it's ever evolving, but I think what I'm trying to achieve is certainly pop music, but with classical undertones. So I like to call it ethereal cinematic pop, which I know is incredibly pretentious. But I think it encapsulates kind of the sonics which I want to have. It stems from a love for Renaissance Baroque music as a countertenor in the opera world, and now kind of trying to fuse that with more contemporary instruments.
How important is it just for musicians in general to give their own, I don't know, individuality, their own personal perspective on music? How important is it to add that?
Well, to have an identity, I mean, it's imperative. Otherwise, what's the purpose? I mean, you could sing and write about baked beans, but I mean, how many people are going to relate to that? It's when you kind of, you're vulnerable, you show your emotions, and yeah, you have an identity. You can establish a community and people can find synergy with you as an artist. It's imperative.
We're going to talk about your music and in terms of identity and what writing a song and lyrics in a bit. But let's talk about school first.
Oh, school.
How do you reflect on school? Was it a place of enjoyment? Was it fulfilling?
Goodness. I look back on my school years very fondly. I was fortunate that it was very liberal. And as a queer kid, there were a number of other queer peers in my year and through the school, which was amazing. I think as any school does, there were cliques, which probably left me in a bit of a floater predicament. I was always kind of switching between groups. I never really knew where I fit in, but I think that's probably my greatest strength now. You can chat to anybody.
Did you enjoy that then? Because I feel like I was perhaps in a similar position in the sense of you kind of know who the two or three people who will look after you really dearly from the very bottom of your heart, but then you can just drift around. Did you see that as a positive thing then, in terms of there was no toxicity?
I think initially, I loved it whilst I was at school. Leaving school, having gone to an institution which wasn't particularly the social thing as one would get at university, it kind of left me a bit high and dry, and I wasn't too sure who my friends were. But now, I mean, being able to utilize it, meeting people out, networking, I hate that word. But not like networking, but having a good time, meeting people that you're not familiar with, and it can be, it's certainly a strength.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in terms of identity at school, have you always known who you are, or have you found that difficult in terms of finding who you are? Because sometimes I speak to people who are people pleasers. Now, there's nothing wrong with a people pleaser, but sometimes they do it to project certain things in themselves that they're not entirely sure of yet.
I think identity encompasses quite a lot. I mean, in terms of sexuality, I had no idea who I was for so long. And I was telling myself that I could be straight. I could telling myself that, James, you're not gay, and lying to myself. But so sexuality aside, I mean, as a kid in school, yeah, I suppose I was a bit of a people pleaser. I felt I was always just trying to appease and be trying to make people happy, trying to make people laugh, trying to make people smile. But I suppose never was always checking in with myself.
So when you listened to music when you were younger, then was that a source of enjoyment and an escape potentially, or was it just something that you just loved and enjoyed?
It was just an integral part of me. I mean, like, some people are good at science, some people are good at maths. I would always just be drawn to musical instruments, pianos, choirs, orchestras, bands. And when my peers would be going home and revising for their GCSEs, I'd be going home and doing Ariana Grande covers. Do you know what I mean? It's not something which it's why I'm immediately drawn to. I come in, I play on the piano. So it's like my home. There's a safe haven, and I feel comfort and solace with being around music, most certainly.
Definitely. Is there a particular artist that you were very fond of in your formative years?
I suppose, again, it's a bit eclectic because I kind of had an adoration for musical theatre when I was very little. Probably saw every theatre production under the sun.
Love that.
Wicked, Wizard of Oz, love them. Then kind of, transitioned into more classical opera, which is just enchanting. And there's so many textures and composers you can delve into, instrumentalists. And that was amazing. And then one composer in particular, gosh. I mean, the one in particular that stands out to me right now is Handel. Like all of his arias I used to sing, kind of from Xerxes, Rodelinda. The ornamentation, it's just stunning. It's beautiful, isn't it? That's what I'm trying to kind of utilize now in my pop music.
Before we move on, can you talk to me about what the word textures means? Forgive my ignorance, but educate me. I'm all ears. I want to know.
Oh, goodness. Now you're calling me out, you witch. textures. Well, it's like polyphonics. There's multiple instruments. They're maybe running in dissonance. So mine might be kind of like atonal to another one. There's many vocal textures, which are not always kind of always harmonious either.
So to someone who really doesn't know, can I use the word depth? Or is it even more than
Yeah, so
that?
It's like, a rainbow. A rainbow has got lots of textures, you know what I mean? Like a rainbow cake has got red, pink, blue.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it. The image.
Of course.
Okay, that makes
every sense of the word. Oh, we do love a rainbow.
I love that now, absolutely. Now, when you put music together yourself then, I imagine maybe you've kind of changed it throughout the years, actually, when you started. I don't know. How did you start to write a song? Is it lyrics first, then music? Do you like to jam? Just sit on an instrument?
I suppose it really varies each time. I mean, I love going to studios, collaborating with other people. But I say it always kind of stems from being sat at the piano and having a wee tinker and just seeing where my fingers take me. And then you kind of, play into the dissonance of your fingers, like you make things clash. And normally I associate that with more of a sad meaning to a song, which I certainly have a tendency to jump more towards, which I'm trying to change. I think it always stems in the foundations of a piano and a voice. And then you can kind of go off piece from there.
Do you write as well in terms of lyrically from personal perspective? I imagine that's obviously easier. But if you say heard something from an amigo, a friend, and it was maybe meaningful or touching, would you consider writing from as if you were them? Or
goodness. I mean, I would always write about something which I've experienced. Try and keep it, if it's a bit too niche, I'd maybe perhaps make it a bit more ambiguous and more people could relate to it. But I mean, you should look at my bloody notes in my iPhone because, I mean, someone says something and I'm like, that's great. I want to use that.
That's so great.
There's always inspiration that can come from someone picking his nose on the tube to bumping into a friend outside. Or do you know what I mean? Come from anything.
So your phone, your notes has potentially got some serious ideas going.
Oh, goodness gracious. I'm not going to pick it up now, but it could be out.
Wow, I love that. Now, you had this sudden rise to fame, and you have mentioned Boy George in terms of this mentor. How did that actually start in terms of that facilitation?
I was working with a producer in London at the time, and we'd done a number of songs together, and we were releasing my first kind of single. It was just coming out of Royal College of Music as well, and I wouldn't say my music was particularly commercial at that time, but there was a lot of kind of operatic elements. And George heard this through the producer. The producer sent it across to him and fell in love with the more classical tones and said, that's so unique, which was really eye-opening for me because I'd been told that doing the whole like pop route wasn't going to work. And I needed to choose between either pop or classical, but having Boy George come up to me and say that was really unique and special and how I was going to get noticed was amazing. I mean, working with him was a big steep learning curve, but it was utterly amazing and I'm very grateful for the experience.
As you say, you've worked with some great names in your career to date. You've been, to be fair, in many places in the world and you've had the opportunity to perform in front of wonderful crowds and wonderful people. To date then, do you have a moment, like a pinch yourself moment where you go, or were you, when you were in it, you were like, okay, wow, that's pretty unbelievable.
I have kind of two. Three probably. I was very naive at the time, and I went to go watch Boy George's concert at Wembley Arena. And he gave me VIP passes when went to the front of the stage and finished one of his songs and was like, there's someone I'd like to introduce you to. And I was like, oh, and I'd had a little Sauvignon Blanc, as you know, as you do at a concert. And he brought me up on stage and we started singing together in front of, like, gosh, 30,000 people. That was pretty wild. I was Kylie Minogue's backing singer for a short while as well. That was utterly remarkable, singing in the Royal Albert Hall and seeing all the effervescence that came with that around Christmas. And more recently this year, as a solo project, I was out in Lake Como and I was working for a big brand doing a performance in this huge villa. I was at the top of this turret in a tower and performing over Lake Como in front of like 6,000 people. That was, again, another pinch me moment. And I thought, maybe my dad won't think I need to be an accountant anymore.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's so, so cool. It's great to have all these memories and stuff. And now when we were talking earlier in the year, I now know that you are technically unsigned, so therefore independent artist. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean in terms of the industry? Because does that mean you have to work 100 times harder? Do you have to be kind of the producer as well as your own agent, as well as your manager?
Goodness, I mean, there's a lot of joy and freedom that comes with being an independent artist, and I'm trying to see the positives in it, certainly. But to be completely candid with you, it hemorrhages money. And when you're competing against record label budgets, and you're meant to be producing high quality content on a regular basis, it's just not sustainable. And that can be really challenging, because if you're independent and you're writing music, you're performing live, because that's kind of where you get your most of your income from. But on top of that, you have to be a content creator, an influencer, selling pasta or doing, and then being a radio plugger, a publicist. And I mean, it's amazing. And there's so many skill sets, which are great to have, but it can be exhausting. And I imagine what I could achieve creatively if I didn't have to do the abundance of work, which artists that are signed to record labels get at their disposal.
Apologies to interrupt the podcast, but a quick word from our series sponsor, RCK Partners. If you're looking to take advantage of R&D tax credits to boost your business's cash flow, RCK Partners can help you. Simply head to rck.partners or follow the link in the podcast description below. Now, back to Jamie. Would you say it's mentally exhausting then, having to have these multiple heads on? Does it drain perhaps and take away from your creative drive? Do you feel like you're neglecting that sometimes?
I just think there's a lot of admin and work that comes with it. So I wouldn't say neglecting it. I mean, as I say, I'm always going to be tinkering around on my piano in the evening, but it's pretty exhausting. And sometimes you're having to relentlessly prove yourself when you've got achievements but no one cares what you did 2 years ago. It's like what you did yesterday, because there's someone else that did something yesterday that was better. So it just feels a little bit relentless, but I suppose perhaps that might inspire some music now and again.
Yeah, absolutely. As someone who is therefore, I suppose, technically self-employed, but I suppose every musician and artist is, there's no set structure to it. How do you find time to switch off, as in give yourself that opportunity to actually go, do you know what, I'm allowed to take an hour or I'm allowed to take a day and just give myself some me time? Because as you say, it must be so draining. And you don't want to switch off because you're so driven to have such a successful career. But you don't want to burn out and you don't want to be mentally exhausted. And you need to, you know, be positive in life.
Most certainly. I think it's a young person's game, and it's in your best interest to always kind of be on. And I mean, it's a lot easier said than, I mean, I got goosebumps just when you were asking me that question, because really I think it's something that most musicians and artists struggle with. Turning off, because you're working with different time zones as well. I mean, I've got a few calls this evening in LA and people in New York. So you don't turn off that button, because actually these are people who are going to be helping you elevate your career. So it's in your best interest to do that. So but gosh, what do I do to kind of, I struggle to turn off. I think my button is always on. I schedule time with my friends, obviously, and that provides a lot of comfort. And a lovely Epsom salt bath.
Well, there you go. Self-care is so important.
Of course. I mean, oh yeah, I'm a bit of a skincare fanatic. I forgot that too. So I, anytime someone's had some like iffy call with me, I'll go and cleanse my face.
Hey, it's about that new start, that new feel. Love it.
Of course.
What can we do then, I suppose, as anyone that's listening, but just in general, what helps a supportive, like helps a support an artist such as yourself?
Well, the inner narrative you have with yourself. I mean, today I was struggling a little bit this morning. I think just reaffirming your achievements to yourself is something which is kind of imperative, because you can get so carried away with the next move and competing with your peers. But actually, if you look back in hindsight, you can actually see the mountain that you've climbed, and it's pretty unbelievable. So where you are now is somewhere you dreamt of being 6 months ago. So I think it's just, you just sit with that, and that's something that should give you comfort. Otherwise, God, what was the rest of the question?
What can we do though, as
members of the public? Okay, sorry, not just me.
No. But so,
things about me.
Obviously, we can stream your music. Yes, we can follow you. But what else can we, you know, in terms of what helps support an independent artist? What's really the crux of it? What helps you?
Just sharing it on social media.
I mean, sharing it, nice.
Sharing, listening. Thinking outside the box, just supporting them, going to their gigs, going to their exhibitions. I'm not just talking about musicians. I'm talking about artists, creatives, set designers, everything, stylists. Go to their exhibitions, go to their shoots. Lend a helping hand, just because the hustle is wild. And sometimes it's not always greatly achieved. I mean, sharing it to your Instagram followers is really nothing in comparison to the amount of work they put into it. So I think that's probably that listening and just being there with your creative friends.
Definitely. Now let's talk about lockdown as well, because you found a very specific crowd slightly closer to home. Tell me what you got up to in lockdown.
Right. So I was singing to my neighbours. I was on tour prior to us all being locked in our home. So I kind of had that kind of performer energy which needed to shine his light, and it wasn't going to be dimmed by any COVID. So I bought myself a little busking speaker and went outside my flat, like block of flats, and started singing to my neighbors. And initially I was petrified. I was thinking to myself, God, I'm either gonna have to move out very quickly, very under the radar, or it's gonna be amazing. And what happened was totally surreal, because the first time I did it, God, I get goosebumps every time I think about it. Is that people came out on their balconies, they took a glass of wine out, they had their kids, and they were applauding and they were cheering, and we were wild, we were all safe. I mean, it's balconies are miles away from one another, but it was like a collective spirit that we couldn't be with one another, but we created something so magical. So I was singing and they were listening.
It's amazing. No, don't dumb it down though, because that's such a, everyone needed something to hold on to as such, but it almost felt like, as you say, it's a surreal experience that was shared together that probably people so desperately needed some sort of escape or even normality.
I was inspired by those videos that you saw, what I saw around Italy initially, because of course that's where the first lockdown was, and people were singing and they were playing their instruments on the balconies. I just thought that my building was somewhat conducive to that, and it worked. So after that all kind of fizzled out, and I mean, people were sending me song requests for like their wedding anniversaries and birthdays. There was a lady in my building who's 86 who went and sung happy birthday at the bottom of the building. And there's magical moments, which I'll never be able to probably do unless we get another pandemic. That could be fun. And then I just thought, how could I go a bit further afield? So I emailed a few local nursing homes and I started to kind of go around to their car parks and sing to residents and whilst they were in their rooms. And one in particular was pertinent and stood out to me, because it's the first time these residents have come out into the car parks. They've been brought out ice lollies, Union Jacks on the car park, and Yeah, we were all singing along. The NHS nurses had decorated it, and it was just phenomenal. And
that is
it was
incredible.
Just a real British camaraderie spirit. And it was like, yeah, we're going to get through this. And it just felt, for once, after being isolated, I lived by myself, so having that kind of music at a distance was just something I'll always treasure.
That is such an incredible feeling, actually, just thinking about that. Was that tough, just on a side note, in terms of being isolated on your own?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. But hey, I'm young, I'm healthy, I can go and walk around parks, which I'm incredibly grateful for. I think just appreciating what I did have around me. Thank goodness I don't have five kids, or do you know what I mean? I'm healthy, I'm functioning, I could write some music. It was challenging for sure, most definitely. But I connected with a few of my neighbours, and we all supported one another through that way.
That's great. That's really nice.
Yeah, you found a routine and what worked for you. I think there was initially a really strong desire to be productive all the time, and I had to kind of just surrender to that and say, let's enjoy the small things. Let's enjoy chopping this one carrot or having an Epsom salt bath. Do you know what I mean?
Brilliant. Right, let's go on to music in the future then.
Please.
Who's that artist that you aspire to work with, and why? And they're allowed to be more than one. I won't pressurize you to one. I imagine that might be challenging.
Yeah, there's immediately. God, actually, the list is suddenly getting so much longer. I think my first one is immediately Lady Gaga. I think the unbelievable, remarkable ability she has to switch between genres is inspiring. Film industry, pop, rock, pop, classical, folk, duetting with Tony Bennett. It's just her versatility and professionalism, her identity she's created as an artist, and the community which she's helped forge and advocate for, is something I would certainly aspire to be and want to work with and collaborate with. Otherwise, a little Andrea Bocelli duet wouldn't go amiss. That would be good fun. I've always wanted to kind of keep the classical opera element in tandem with what I'm doing, because it's a part of me and I never want to neglect it.
I know this seems a random question, but what are artists like? Obviously, big or small, it depends. Sometimes you're highly unlikely to be seen if you do it with big artists. But when you reach out, say, on social media to certain people and go, fancy collabing, want to do something, how's that work?
Oh, it's quite a good idea, Louis. Maybe I should give it a try. Maybe I'll message Andrea after this.
I'm not going down that regard. Not down that route, but I don't know. What does that happen? Do you find any small people? Because sometimes people help each other and you can put together something. I don't know.
Maybe. Of course.
That's absolutely rubbish.
Gosh. I mean, yes, you're relentlessly putting yourself out there. Predominantly, most of the time, it's to no avail. You just persevere with it. And yeah, I think sometimes you receive emails back and you collaborate and it's magical. But yeah, I think that's probably the best.
So what does the future hold then for you?
For the
in
JH?
In terms of your goal. No, so let's say short-term goal, end of the year, and then let's go 5 years. What do you envision?
I want to release an album of music next year. I know, which is going to be quite a lot of work to do, but I've probably got about 6 or 7 songs already, which I'm happy with. So I'm anticipating spring or summer next year for that release. Mm. Off the back of that, I'd love to tour. I mean, I've been very lucky with being able to perform in the more corporate sphere all around the world. But I would love to kind of go as an artist and perform in regions, Australia, America, and stadiums. We're going to get there. And it's going to be...
Defo.
I think within the next 2-3 years, maybe not the stadiums, but performing worldwide. That's the dream. And I'm not going to stop until it happens.
Definitely. Perseverance and determination are key qualities.
Of course. Most definitely. Resilience.
Resilience, definitely. And that might lead on to my final question that I ask every guest. What does the word headstrong mean to you?
Um, just nurturing your mind, your body, your soul, and sticking strong with the core values, which mean a lot to you, and not letting anybody's perceptions alter that, and being firm in your roots, your grounded, your foundations, and what you stand up for, and what it means something to you.
So I'm going to add one question onto the end of that then.
Last one.
How do you not let anyone's perception affect you? How do you have that, as you say, resilience, determination, that ability to be headstrong?
Gosh, Louis, these questions are very good.
Sorry.
I think it's experience, having had a lot of things thrown at me in the past. I think you learn how to pick yourself up. It's nourishing your body, as I say, eating well, and trusting in your talent, knowing that opinions are subjective, and you have to look at their bias in it. Like, is the source reliable? Do you know what I mean? Who is this bloke? I think trusting in your talent and nurturing yourself and treating yourself well is imperative. Most definitely.
I love that. Jamie, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong. It's been an absolute pleasure, a thrill as ever. And I wish you all the very best.
Thank you very much, my friend.
And that concludes this penultimate episode of season 8. A huge, huge thank you to Jamie for joining me on the podcast. I know that it was an engaging conversation. I really enjoyed talking to Jamie, and it's been so nice to reconnect and have these kind of conversations that are so important. If you enjoyed the episode, please do hit subscribe, leave a review, leave 5 stars if you want to. Every little helps. Now, I will see you next week for the season finale of season 8.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.